Good morning. We are ready to resume the public hearings. I'm proposing that we start. Members, you are all welcome. I will be doing this morning's proceedings of facilitating the oral presentations from the submitters who have requested and indicated that they would like to interact with the committee on their written submissions. And my co-chair has another urgent business to attend to. He will join us for the afternoon. So, co-chair, as and when you're ready to leave to attend to your business. members, you are all welcomed, and we are doing this session under Section 59(1)(1)(a) of the Constitution and Section 72(1)(a) of the Constitution to facilitate the involvement of the public, the entities, public bodies, institutions, and those institutions, associations, and organizations, and those people who have requested and indicated according to the advert that they would want as well to talk to the submissions that they made in time before the closing date of the 15th of June. So these that will present in the program this week are some of those that have indicated through their submissions that they would like to address members of the committee. Members, you remember that these are not exclusive and special than the ones we undertook in the provinces. They all have and carry the same footing, and their strengths are all equal. They are all based on the substantive matters and whatever matters that are raised. So the content of the submissions are their strengths. It's not from because they've appeared in a national sitting in parliament, therefore they carry any special or exclusive weight in terms of the whole process. They're all equal and will be treated like that when considering the report. Those that were made in the provinces in various venues and these that are made here are of submissions, they carry the same weight. And therefore, I'm making an appeal, members, that really, if you can, you don't have to ask questions. if you can, and you don't have to make input, you can just note, and you can just note the written submission. It's all clear, so that we haven't completed to identify people that have requested to make submissions, so there might still be more. So we're not necessarily saying we are concluding on Friday, because the process of going through the written submissions is not complete yet. So bear that in mind as you ask your clarity questions on matters that are not clear from the written submissions. Documents, the files of these submitters were circulated, and the program has been circulated, and so we will follow this program as is before us. All right. All right, we're then going to call the first submitters and the speaking times, maximum speakers. Maximum is 10 minutes. If you can do it in 3 minutes, well and good. If you one just to point one or two things in 30 seconds is fine, well and good. You are all timed. Members, it would not be 20 minutes for your deliberations as it appear, but please, we will have to cut you if you dwell too much on one submission. And please bear with us and be as nippy as possible in each submitter if you have anything to raise or question of clarity or anything like that. Thank you very much. We then call the first in terms of the program. Hi. Honourable Maila.
Thanks, Chair. I think, Chair, your statement that we should rather not engage on the deliberations by those who want to make their submissions is actually correct. I think we should just listen to what they are saying, as we did in the public hearings. Because once you open up for deliberations, it then creates an indication that these ones are given a special status as compared to the people that we're engaging throughout the country.
Yeah, but what I'm asking is that clarity questions, because you know you can misinterpret what's written on the submission. But you know, inputs and further submissions from members, as if we are considering, because we're not considering each submission as is, because considerations process will ensue once we've completed this facilitation of the involvement. So clarity questions, because you know we may read wrongly, you know what's written there. So that I think we should allow. Honourable Pumlon.
I'm trying to find out. You remember when we were in the public hearings, we did not ask for clarity-seeking questions. I thought when you said that you don't want to make it different from that. But I'm saying, Are we making it different because at least there's 10 minutes here and perhaps we may ask one or two clarity questions? Is that what you're saying?
Honourable Carter?
Chair, I actually agree with your first ruling. If it's questions of clarity, we must be allowed to ask questions of clarity.
Honourable Utilis?
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm covered, except to say that during the public hearings, we did ask people who were presenting, say, if they indicate what do they say on the subject matter. And before they left the podium, we used to ask them as to what is their view. That was the clarity seeking question.
All right, so I think then, members, we're going to proceed in that fashion that we'll allow just clarity questions if there's anything that's on that it's not clear on the written submission. Honourable
Mukwili.
Yeah.
It's Mukwili, Honourable.
Yeah, Honourable Mukwili.
Yeah, thanks,
Chair. And Honourable Mulaudz thereafter.
I think for the purpose of time, Chair, let's allow the presentation to members that are here to present to us. Let's allow them to present. In any way, we are going to have a meeting as a committee. We must not waste time that is not on our side. Even at the public hearings, we didn't allow any clarity-seeking questions. So it will be unfair, Chair, if we are treating other stakeholders differently from what we have been doing during our roadshow. So for the purposes of time, I would suggest that we listen, we have the presentations before us as a committee, and then when we deliberate, we will deliberate based on what is before us in writing. Thanks.
Honorable Mlaudzi, followed by Honorable Swartz.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I'm to add what my co-member, Honorable Mkwile, said, because we never open a door for the poor people to clarify whatever they were presenting. We were just listening as a parliament. We were going to sit down as a committee of this parliament and entertain each and every application where people they wrote their submission written, which if we want clarity seeking question, they will be not there, except that if it is indeed is deep, needed a clarification question, will phone the particular presenters. Like them, they are presenting here, we have their document. If there is some clarification question needed, we can do that after we have entertained other written submission. Because truly, if you can ask the clarification question, you can see how many honorable members are here. It will delay the whole processes. Thank you.
Honorable Swartz.
Chair, thank you. You have to a certain degree clarified it because I was concerned about the item deliberations, which is totally different. And I would tend to agree with your initial ruling to allow clarity-seeking questions only where needed so that we can, bearing in mind that this is a slightly different process because written submissions have already been made. These are institutions that are coming. And so I would urge that we continue on the basis of your earlier ruling. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Carter, followed by Honourable Ngobe.
Chairperson, I'm so sorry.
And Honourable Mutap.
Chair, I think it's very important that we do not try and change the normal process of public hearings. Every public hearing we have in Parliament, we usually make provision for deliberation. What we are saying here, let us ask for questions of clarity. We can't go and change the ordinary process that we always follow in Parliament because this is the Constitutional Review Committee. In fact, this is even more important than any other public hearing we've ever had. But then it is not true that there were not questions of clarity. Maybe it was in Group A, but in Group B, the chairperson would say, what was your view on that if it wasn't clarity? So therefore, please, Group B, I can tell you we've had, and also I've seen recordings of Group A where questions were asked. Thank you.
Honourable Mtabo.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the public hearings we are referring to
Will you follow?
Yeah. Oh, must I continue?
Yes, continue.
Honourable
Continue. Oh,
sure. The public hearings we are referring to are the public hearings in relation to the same process we are engaged in, processes in terms of possible amendment of Section 25 of our Constitution. Chairperson, I would like to align myself with Honourable Mayila and Honourable Mukwele and Honourable Mlaudzi in relation to the public hearings which we did outside Parliament. So it will be unfair, Chairperson, if we don't follow the same mode of operation which prevailed during those public hearings. And it will appear, Chairperson, with due respect, it will appear we shall be treating these submitters who will be doing it orally here in Parliament with kid's love as compared to the masses of our people. So can sanity then prevail so that the same mode of operation that prevailed in those public hearings also prevail here? We should be consistent with whatever we do. I beg your indulgence. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to colleagues and the guests in the gallery. Chairperson, let me start by conscientizing my colleagues and you, Chairperson. These hearings are not the same exactly like the ones we have outside in terms of the activities of the day. Here in Parliament, at 2, we've got a sitting. Some of us are from smaller parties. People will start disappearing one by one around that time. Even if we've made the arrangements with our whips, but it can't be the whole week because we're going to be in this process for the whole week. And I understand that the rules that we adopt today for these hearings will last us throughout the week. So that's another thing that we must consider, that the time is not on our side. On those bases, Chair, I therefore agree with those honourable members who are saying let's continue as what we're doing in the hearings before these ones. Let the presenters present so that also we are conscious about time, so that we all finish these processes without any disturbances. Because if we skip the fact that at 2 there is a sitting, we will have a problem. That's a reality that we are facing. That's my submission, Chair, that let us just allow the presenters present. We can always interact. We do even have files before us with the details of presenters. We can even, at our own time, do further research on them if we are not clear on some other issues. But to make this process smooth and all of us participate against time, I propose that we don't ask questions.
Yeah. Can we be short then now? I think we all deliver on one point. Honourable Fultana, followed by the honourable member next to Breidenbach.
Thank you, Chair. I think I want to close this matter by suggesting
Dr.
that...
Mulder.
Close this matter by suggesting that we do what is the norm in Parliament. If there were no special rules that were set and agreed upon by Parliament on how to deliberate on this particular matter, let's do the norm. Otherwise, we are opening ourselves to a lot of criticism. We know that this matter is being very closely watched to see if we are going to falter on the process itself, let alone the content. Let's do what is the norm in Parliament, whatever it is. Thank you.
Well, Dr. Mulder?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. The norm in Parliament is that we interact with people that make presentations to Parliament. That's the norm. But the point is, I think your original ruling is the correct one. You don't want us to have deliberations at this stage. I understand that. But if there are questions of clarity needed to be asked, let people ask them within your rulings, and it will take one or two questions and we move on. It doesn't make sense because if we rule that nothing can be asked, why would we have presentations? We all can read the documents. It doesn't make sense. But your original ruling was correct, and we're already 10 minutes behind our program.
Thank you very much. Members, please, let's understand this is a public facilitation process, and and those sections that I've asked. So please, you will not deliberate. Considerations, it's a next process out of this. This is a consultation process. We are just facilitating that. So please stick to the written, to clarity seeking only, limited to that. The agribusiness, please, your 10 minutes. Are you ready?
Ready, Chair. Thank you very much.
Right,
thank you for the privilege to... We'll engage with whichever terms you set. We're ready to do it. On my far left is Theo Boshoff. He's our legal expert. He will do the presentation. Next to him, Wandile Sihlobo, our economist. Next to me, Dr. John Purchase, the CEO of Agribusiness. Myself, Francois Stradom. I'm the chairperson. I'm also the CEO of Senvis, an agricultural company. So Agbus is the food value chain beyond the primary production sector. So we don't farm, we facilitate the rest of the food value chain. That's who we are, who our constituents are, and we look forward to. Thank you for the time. Theo Boshoff will continue.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honourable members. So from AgBiz's side, as our Chairperson has also mentioned, we are committed to land reform and transformation of the industry. And as an agribusiness chamber, primarily our interest is, of course, the long-term sustainability of the agri-food system, and achieving successful transformation and land reform is absolutely critical to that. But in addition to that, of course, it's a moral imperative which we absolutely have to engage with, and I think which the sector is ready to engage with. The way we see this, the desired outcomes, is to extend property rights to the majority of South Africans whilst maintaining a globally competitive sector. So, Chairperson, our members, of course, finance the agricultural sector, and the banks, as well as the land bank, their current exposure is currently estimated at 197 billion rand towards the sector, of which about two-thirds is collateralized using the value of the land. So the unintended consequences that we foresee of an amendment that would allow expropriation without compensation, because we do not believe it's necessary at this stage to amend the Constitution, is of course that access to finance can become more problematic or can become more difficult to access. And this could also spill over to the rest of the value chain as well as to other sectors of the economy. What we also do is we do maintain the Agribusiness Confidence Index. And generally speaking, throughout history, investment in the sector, especially investment into capital formation, fixed investments, do follow the confidence index in terms of where the agribusinesses have confidence. And if the confidence declines, we may see a decline in investment into fixed improvements. And the long-term or perhaps medium-term consequences of that, Chairperson, will be felt on food security, because reduced investment and production, also as a result of reduced access to finance, can lead to the point where we have a greater reliance on imported food products. We are currently a net exporter of food, which means that, and the result of that is we can supply food at export parity price, which is some of the cheapest food in the world. If the production declines to the extent where we have to import food, we can envision that the food prices, generally food prices, could rise by as much as 100%. So, Chairperson, the legal merits that we see as well is we question whether or not an amendment is necessary. So we understand that land reform, the purpose of land reform is for restorative justice. But as we see it, the restorative justice has two elements. There's the element of redress, which is vitally important, but at the same time, it's also to create new opportunities for the majority of South Africans to which property rights must be extended. And the Constitution must be durable enough to also provide those opportunities and securities for the new for those receiving property rights under the Land Reform Program. We also believe that the current provisions, the just and equitable provisions, is in line with the international norm, which stipulates just compensation. And our own provisions of just and equitable must first be fully tested and rigorously tested before an amendment is considered. We do believe it already provides a very robust and flexible mechanism, which hasn't been fully tested. And Section 25(8) of the Constitution specifically says no provision of this, no section of this provision may impede land, water, and related reform, and the section may also be limited where it's reasonable and justifiable to do so. So we also undertook some scenario planning exercise where we tried to predict what could happen as a result of different policy decisions. Now, in the worst case scenario is if there's continued indecision regarding land reform and uncertainty regarding land reform policy, is that you may see some of the frustration boiling over into a self-help scenario, which of course would not be desired economically or socially. Now, maintaining the status quo also is not an option, because that would still keep the economy very concentrated. An amendment may lead to a gradual disinvestment scenario where initially there might still be macroeconomic growth, but in the long term or in the medium term, that could also go down to the self-help scenario if it doesn't achieve economic growth or inclusive growth. So the only outcome that we see, or the desirable outcome that we see, is an equitable and stable growth environment where property rights are recognized but also extended to the majority of South Africans. So, Chairperson, the alternative proposals to an amendment to the Constitution which we propose there is land reform, of course, is multifaceted. There's an urban element to it where spatial planning mechanisms can be used very strongly to try and address the apartheid spatial planning legacy that we have. On the rural front, so agricultural land specifically, we propose that the budget be reconsidered and split between transforming the commercial sector, which we believe should be done on a public-private basis, a partnership basis with the industry, and that would, of course, free up some of the resources for the state to address the social side of land reform, so specifically labor tenants, farm worker housing, and settlement purposes. Now, what we mean by the public-private partnership basis is with industry, you can use a portion of the budget to leverage private sector capital to make a lot more funding available. And this can be done through blended financing models, agri-BEE, joint ventures, a compulsory right to first refusal, and of course, in the we will definitely believe that legal reform in the communal space is vitally important as well for development. And finally, expropriation with compensation, and to test the current provisions of the Constitution where voluntary mechanisms are not available. So, Chairperson, back in 2005, AGBIS, along with the Banking Association, developed a financing model, a blended financing model, and that there are various permutations possible. So it could be a joint grant funding with commercial funding, as well as perhaps an interest rate subsidy to try and reduce the risk of lending to new entrants, to make a lot more finances available for land reform and to accelerate land reform. So our estimate is, had we done this back in 2009, and also had we spent the entire budget allocated for land reform and land acquisition, we could be 2 to 3 times further along the line in terms of transferring land than where we currently are. But we don't believe it's too late. We still believe there's definitely scope for that. So, Chairperson, the expropriation with or without compensation also only deals with the resource constraints and the means of accessing property or acquiring property. We do believe that to get the land reform or to get the full potential for the land reform program to reach its full potential, there are certainly other supplementary things that have to be done. First and foremost, we believe legal reform is incredibly important. And here we believe a framework for redistribution, beneficiary selection, to outline that in redistribution specifically, a way to streamline the settlement of restitution claims, and of course for security of tenure in communal areas. And in this regard, we support the recommendations made by the high-level panel by Parliament. And e-cadastre is another another proposal that we make, whereas opposed to a land audit, which only speaks to ownership, if we can have an overlaid electronic databases where it showcases ownership, water rights, mineral rights, it will speed up the process and also improve the process in terms of monitoring and evaluation. Where the private sector and our members specifically, we believe, can probably make the biggest contribution is also to support the new entries to the sector and the beneficiaries of land reform to become successful in the commercial agricultural enterprise. And here, there's a lot being done in the sector in terms of partnership models. A blended development finance is also currently on the table. We also propose the concept of a rural development agencies. So public-private partnership extension services, training, support, and encouraging and facilitating market access are all crucial things which our sector can do. Some of it is currently being done, but with a blended financing model specifically, we believe it will leverage the necessary capital and make the members capable of scaling these efforts up on quite a large scale. Then just finally, of course, the restoration of dignity, because we understand it's not just land reform, it's not purely a commercial undertaking, and it's also necessary for social justice to restore dignity. And there, I think, probably the honest discussion between South Africans is required, as well as also to see what role the private sector can play to try and achieve that. Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for your time.
Are you concluding? You're done. Thank you very much. We're ready to take the next submitter. AgriSA. Yeah, is Grain SA here? All right. You ready to make a presentation? Honorable Swartz? Oh, Koranov, yes.
Just for, I think you should just put it to the committee if there is a question for clarity, but you must use your judgment. If it's not clarity, you must cut that person or that member.
Yeah, I'll do that, but I thought that members will indicate if they have a question, a clarity question, then we give them an opportunity, rather than requesting you to make clarity questions. So if you have, a person will raise their hand. Otherwise, we will just note the submission and it's with us. So it's part of the process of consideration. Honorable Fultana.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just referring to slide number 5,
Bullet point number three, expropriation without compensation. Do I understand you to be saying in that sentence, together with the next bullet point, starting with the word access, do I understand you to be saying that finance should be limited, availability of finance should be limited only to a few, whilst millions of South Africans are starving under the current scenario?
Reply.
Thank you for that. No, that's not what we are currently referring to. But by the virtue of expropriation without compensation could limit finance, we're basically relying more or speaking more to the property rights situation and making that if you have strong property rights, you attract investments. If there is investments, then there's productivity and growth. But we're not implying that it should be limited to a certain few. Thank you.
Honourable Swart.
Thank you, Chair. Just to the legal advisor, can I ask you your understanding of Section 25 as it is presently worded? Would you agree that it allows for reduced compensation, full compensation, and in certain circumstances, no compensation, and therefore that there is no need to amend the Constitution to allow expropriation without compensation from a legal perspective?
Yeah, but it is a leading question, Honourable Swart. It's not a clarity seeking question, so I would like to rule it out.
Chair? Refer to your document.
Chair?
I would like to rule it out, Sanjay.
Chair?
Yes,
I think the reason why we said there must not be engagement with presenters is exactly what is happening now. We are going to ask questions that are leading to something. So we are requesting, Chair, that we deny our communities, the poor of the poorest, the chance to explain themselves when we were doing these public hearings. Now before us there are elite people. Because they are elite, we give them chance to deliberate on what they are presenting to us. I'm asking you, Chair, that we must take presentations as they are. During our deliberation as a committee, we'll then, if there is a need for us to get some clarities, do so as a committee. I'm appealing with you, Chair. This thing is going to continue happening. It's going to happen, I'm telling you now.
Chair, I'll ask a direct question then. It will not be a leading question.
Dr. Mulder?
Chairperson, I think we should have clarity. It's not a question of elite people or not elite people. It's South African citizens that asked to come and make presentations. We've invited them and we should treat them accordingly. I think it's wrong to refer to this as elite and that as elite. Andile Kikama from Blackland will take serious exception if you say he's from the elite.
Well, you are replying, Honourable Mulder. I don't think that's a member's view and opinion. You don't have to reply, otherwise, you are out of order.
Honourable Carter? I really think that as the chairperson, you are supposed to protect our visitors from here, as well as any other member. You are supposed to be protecting. We cannot stand here and start insulting people. That is wrong. That is absolutely wrong. But I think what is really important as chairperson for you to look at the invitations that were sent to all of the stakeholders here. What did the invitation say? I just had some input to the invitations that were sent. They were told in the invitation, an expectation were created, okay, that there will be interactions. But now, bottom line, we've agreed that we're not going to have it. But let's not have this interference and trying to just mess up the whole press process. Let us continue. If there's questions of clarity, and if members like the EFF is out of order, ask them to leave the house. That's it.
Yeah. Look, Honourable Swart, you wanted to clarify yourself or what?
Chair.
May I then just ask the legal advisor, what does he mean by compensation in terms of the present wording of Section 25?
Where are you referring? It is a paragraph, is there a sentence?
Yes, it's otherwise on page 2 of their submission where he refers to compensation, just compensation in terms of section 25.
So what is then the clarity question?
Yeah.
What is your clarity question?
What does he mean by just compensation in terms of section 25?
Thank you, Honourable Swart. Can you reply?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Well, we note that section 25 makes provision for just and equitable compensation. And by just and equitable compensation, our understanding is that the courts would have to weigh up, of course, the interests of the public and the interests of the individual. Now, given the specific circumstances that might be at play or the specific history of the property especially, I think one cannot discount the fact that or the possibility that just and equitable, it could be just and equitable to have zero compensation, and the whole section 25 may also be limited in terms of section 36. However, all of this is at the moment to some regard speculation, because the courts have not had the opportunity to have this section properly ventilated, and we have not had enough sufficient test cases with different scenarios where the courts have been able to express their opinion on this. So whilst we believe it's possible, it's uncertain to tell us this regard simply because we don't have enough precedent from the court to know for sure, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honourable Mpumlwa?
Yes, on page 8, you talked about redress and opportunity. I just want clarification. What do you mean when you say strike a balance? You didn't clarify that. Could you clarify that?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Section 25, our understanding is that it's got a double function. So the dual function, on the one hand, it has to protect private property from arbitrary deprivation from the state. So in other words, to go forward or prospective looking, and has to protect individuals from an overbearing, from having to sacrifice their property rights for the public interest. But on the other hand, it also talks about extending property rights, so changing the patterns of ownership. And our understanding is that its dual function is one, to protect the institution of property going forward, but at the same time to also address the imbalances in ownership in terms of property and who the property owners are. So our understanding is that this balance, whilst protecting it going forward, is to make the constitution durable enough in the future for 10, 20, 100 years from now, but at the same time also capable of redressing the results of the past, where we know that the patterns of ownership and who owns the productive assets in the economy is unequal.
Thank you very much. Honourable Pumlan, you want to make a follow-up? But
what is wrong? Yes, I do want, because what I didn't understand, I think is a bit vague, unless he doesn't want to clarify further. Are you saying that the government will have enough money to pay for this? Is that what you're saying?
Sir?
Imbalances to be able to...
Chairperson, well, we believe in alternative recommendations, we did note that I think to transform the commercial sector, because for the social aspect of land reform, where you can't necessarily make out a commercial case, so you wouldn't want, for example, a commercial loan to be extended. It might be undesirable. So the private sector can also assist by making more funds available in total to transform the commercial agricultural sector, and that would then free up a large portion of the budget which the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform has to focus on the social need for land reform. For example, labour tenants, farm workers and so on, which would not necessarily... were not desirable to be career farmers, but also have a legitimate right to redress. So, Jefferson, I think with the alternative recommendations that we make, and we do believe that the state probably could have a sufficient budget as it currently is, and we did also do that analysis in terms of where the existing budget has been spent, and believe over the last, since 2009, only roughly on average about 40% of the budget allocated for land reform was spent on land acquisition. So we believe if you do rectify this budget and leverage off private sector funding, then we do believe that the state and private sector together will have enough funding, Chairperson.
Yeah. Further additions?
Yes, thank you. Just further clarification from our side. I think Theo has actually dealt with it very well. The problem is that from 2009 there was a serious decline in the money that was, or the budget that was allocated for land acquisition.
this can be turned around. We believe if this is such a serious problem for government and for South Africa, which I believe it is, the necessary resources can be placed there, and you can leverage your private sector funding through the models that we've developed. The President in the SONA 2018 very clearly asked for models from private sector so that we can speed up land reform and land acquisition. And that model we already proposed to government in these chambers in 2015 already, but it was never implemented. So we believe the right mechanisms are there to leverage your private sector to speed up land reform with a necessary budget from government.
Thank you very much. We then conclude the first submission. And we're going to take Grain SA, you here. Right.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and members. Thank you for the opportunity. The team here today is two commercial farmers that I brought along. The one is from the Free State and the other one is from Mafikeng in the Northwest Province. I think we have also participated in the public hearings. It was quite an experience for us, but thank you for also hosting that to help this country get through this. Grain South Africa is a voluntary non-profit organization for grain farmers, and I think we have highlighted in our presentation, you know, who we are and what we do. Then, as the previous chairperson indicated to us, we must clearly state what is it that we stand for. So I want to read from the document and said, Grain South Africa is of the view that the current constitution is sufficient and broad enough to enable the government to implement a just and equitable land reform in a sustainable way and to grow the economy whilst we maintaining the food security. However, having said that, I think we have proven as an organization our commitment to land reform. We are not against land reform, and I think we have done a lot of work to try and establish black farmers in the country, and I think our record is standing for that. We've also just shared with the Agricultural Committee, you know, our readiness for the coming season. What are the impediments for land reform? I think the first one, and this is the most serious one that we need to address, Chair, and this is our black farmers are not moving into commercial status because they can't access finance. So for me, that is the biggest issue to deal with land reform, is to sort out how are we going to finance our black farmers. If they don't own the land, the current regulatory framework and the financial system is they can't get a loan. Not from the land bank, not from IDC, not from EFSA, not from any commercial bank for that matter. And I think this is what you will hear from our black farmers complaining the most. Just as last season, of the black farmers that is currently in our system, that is roughly about 10,000 of them, only 30% of the land that they have access to has been planted because of a lack of finance. So for us, in terms of moving forward and seeing that we're moving forward, that is the most important. The post-settlement support, I think we have indicated that. How do we identify the beneficiaries? I think that's also a big stumbling block for us moving forward. If a person is not interested in farming and you give them a piece of land, you know, we have seen mostly that there is no production going forward. There are plenty of farmers, and I'm talking black farmers here, that wants to farm, and that already we've trained them, they organized, but they suffer to get loans to do the production. I think Agbus just properly said to you in terms of the budget allocation for land reform versus the agri-parks, I think, you know, when you talk about the chicken or the egg thing, in this instance, I think land reform must come before we start looking at agri-parks. You first need to get your production going as a country, and then you can develop your value chain specifically. There are some challenges around our infrastructure, Chair. We got a lot of the black farmers now into commercial production, and when you get to areas like Eastern Cape, there's no silos there. There's not a good road infrastructure. We battled to get the fertilizer to them. You know, the trucks can't get into those roads in those areas. So those are real challenges that is not directly related to land reform, but it is hampering our progress in terms of showing that we can get into commercial practice. Then, obviously, there is not a lot of policy certainty at the moment around joint ventures and partnerships. There's a lot of goodwill amongst the farmers to cooperate with each other, but we need some framework that will incentivize us. Chair, as the grain sector, we're at the bottom of our food chain, so as food security is very important. And I've tried to highlight to you
How important is grain in a food basket? So the inflation is about 16% food, and of that food basket, 75% is grain or grain-based, whether it's meat or dairy or chicken or whatever the case may be. So if we fail as a maize sector or grain sector, you're going to have high food inflation, and then the country is going to experience high inflation, and then your interest rates go up and your GDP goes down, and let me not go all the way down to job creation and all of that. So for us, it is important that we produce enough maize in the country so that our balance sheet is healthy. The magic number is about 11.5 million tons. If we're below that, the prices are low, like we're currently having, like 2,000 rand. If we short of that, then we go to 4,000 rand a ton for maize, and then all the food jumps like, 50, you know, the maize price jumps 50% and the food inflation gets high. So those are important things, and we've just shared with the Agricultural Committee that there's a higher than 50% chance for a drought coming this season, and that should be of concern to us, and how to mitigate that is going to be a challenge, a little bit off the land reform. So mining sector, we also got a huge challenge. The mining is consuming a lot of the agricultural land, and if we continue that way and we're not replacing those land, we're going to run out of food in 5 years' time. So that is something that why we need to get areas like the Eastern Cape into production quite seriously, the KZN area where there's more rain and deep soils. Chair, I want to move over to the solutions that we've proposed. The first one is we need to get title deeds to the farmers, otherwise they can't access finance. And I think we need to restore dignity in that way as well, and I think we feel very strongly about it. And it is very sad for me to sit year after year talking to these black farmers and saying we're going to try and help you to get finance. And every year we go to the banks, and every year they said we can't do it because there's no collateral and we need to sort that out. So the second thing is, and I think that we've also discussed a little bit, and that was around the urban areas. You know, there's a lot of land hunger that we can silence with giving urban people title deeds and some dignity, and let's rather try that than not doing it. I think this leadership in government in time has got the opportunity to enable people to own houses and to move forward as far as that's concerned. Chair, and I know the difficult one is your communal areas and how to deal with the ownership in communal areas. If those farmers, if we don't change the status of those farmers and those women in the rural areas that's working the land, they won't be able to access finance. So I'm hammering on this as a big stumbling block for us to move forward. And one way to do it is to get a government guarantee, for instance, to the land bank, so that there's some collateral against which the loans can be done. We have asked Treasury about this guarantee, and they said, well, all the guarantees are currently with Eskom and with SAA, and we've got a question about that. There was an old minister here in this house, I think it was Hendrik Schoeman, who said in Afrikaans, wil jy vlieg or wil jy vreet? Do you want to fly or do you want to eat? And I think somehow we need to sort that out as a country. We can't give all the guarantees to Eskom and SAA and tell the farmers we can't help you. If we want to produce food, this is what we need to look at. There's some good partnerships that's going that we need to incentivize and encourage. We are also partnering with government to develop extension officers. In some provinces we've got relationships so that the extension officers have enough confidence and education to actually help the farmers that they can listen to them. One desperate thing is a very practical thing that we need, can sort out quickly, and as far as the land reform is concerned, is have one land audit so that we can measure where we are, we know where we want to go to. And I think the farming sector is very vibrant. It is, you know, if you give them a goal and you put it on the wall, they will get there. I think that is... the identification of the strategic partners are very important. There was a lot of corruption in the system thus far, and I think we need to sort that out. Chair, I want to leave you with an image from Africa. And this is the great Willibeus migration. When the Willibeus, when they in this side of the river, it is dry. If they stay there, there's lions that are going to catch them. They can't calve this side of the river because there's not food for the calves. They need to get through this river. And I think this is where South Africa is standing as far as land reform is concerned. But in this river, it is deep. In this river, there are crocodiles. In this river, there's a great current coming down. There's also high banks on the other side. But we need
to get on the other side. And all that I'm asking government is carefully look at what is the current like, what is the bank like on the other side, where are the crocodiles. We can't just jump into this river and think we're all going to get on the other side. And we all need to jump. We can't do it one by one because then the crocodiles are going to catch us. So all that we're pleading as a sector with you is help us to get on the other side, because that's where the grass is green. That is where the calves can be born. That's where the next generation can move on. But somewhere we ask you, please consider the crocodiles. Please consider the current. Please consider how deep it is and where's the bank to get out on the other side. And I believe that this country can do that. We've done it before, but we need to watch what are these risks. And if we want to have food for our next generation, we carefully need to do this thing right. We're ready to help you, sir. This is our commitment. We've been in this business for a long time. We want to help you. And these are the things that I think you can help us to change so that we can get on the other side of the river. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Grain SA. Honourable Fultana, you will point us where you are seeking clarity on the documents or on the presentation. No general questions, eh?
Thank you very much, Chair. Because it was not flashed on the screen, I didn't refer to the document, but I listened very carefully. I'm sure he'll be able to respond to my question. It's quite specific. My question is, if the current situation is so helpful to both landowners as well as to address the issue of food security with limited access to land by millions of South Africans, why would you not want us to change? 13 million people go without food on a daily basis with the current situation. Why would you not want us to change that so that more people can have access to land? Thank you.
Supply.
So, Chair, I think the first thing is we need to change. And I'm talking change as a sector. We are of the opinion we don't need necessarily to change our constitution. And the reason is that if we change the constitution and we don't give title deeds, we're going to sit in exactly the same situation and even worse, because then more and more land won't be able to get into production because there's no crop finance available. And this is why we believe let's fix the implementation rather than enlarging the problem of having enough food in the country. So my contention is this. We need to get the land reform going. That I'm not unclear about. But I don't think we need to change the constitution to get that done.
Goranov.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just want to be absolutely sure. You say about 70% of the black farmers did not receive any commercial substance from the financial sector. You name two reasons. One is a lack of title deeds, and secondly, a lack of infrastructure. Am I correct?
Yes, Chairperson. Not all the farmers are part of our program. As I said, we've got about 10,000 farmers in the database, of which we've got their ID numbers and their farm names and the GPS coordinates and the soil samples and all of that. And of those farmers, if we add all those hectares together, last season, 70% of that was not planted. So only 30% got some form of access to finance or some assistance from government or whoever to get it planted. And as I said, the reason why they're not getting it is they don't have collateral, so they can't offer anything to a financial institution. And in some instances, they get low yields because they don't have fertilizer, because the trucks can't get in there, or they don't put lime into the soil to correct it and all those sort of technical stuff that, yes.
Honorable Mkwele.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks. My question is on the issue of title deeds. Can you distinguish for us between the right to title deed or the difference between property rights and right to property? What do you mean by that?
Clyde?
Chairperson. I'm no lawyer. I'm an economist and a farmer. I think my understanding is that we as a grain sector can assist you in indicating to you what are the implications for the decisions that we take in terms of property rights or in terms of title deed. There's a lot of talk about giving farmers a 30-year lease when they work a government land. Ask this guy. He's been working government land. He's not moving forward, or he's struggling. And if he's got a lease from government and the financial sector doesn't recognize that as a form of collateral, he's not going to get finance either. So I think, you know, and maybe I'm in a different terrain here. If we South Africans, I think we're entitled to have property in this country. This is what makes South Africa South Africa, because South Africans own it. So for me, the thing is, if we want to resolve the land reform issue, we must resolve, one, the dignity issue, which I've been acutely aware of in this public hearings and all the discussions that we had. And I think we understand that a lot better after all this public hearings. What are the needs for dignity restoration? It's not just giving somebody a piece of land. You also need to empower them to create wealth out of that. Land is not, you don't eat land, you eat pop. So you somehow need to create something out of that. So, ma'am, I don't know whether I'm answering you properly, but I'm not, I think, in a position to explain to you exactly what are the legal definitions of it. I don't know whether one of my colleagues want to respond to that.
Thank you very much, and I think that concludes the clarity questions. Honourable Pumlar, don't have an afterthought.
I'm sorry. Thank you very much. It's a pity I didn't see your papers, all of them, and I thought you would please get some presentation. But however, I just want, you talked about very good crocodiles on the road and things like that. But you're aware that there are quite a number of, and I'm trying to find out whether this is part of the crocodiles, that there are farmers that own more than 20 farms each, and so on. And you find that there is this concentration in this, and this part of the crocodiles, and how do you manage to, at least without, you know, how do you manage to see, at least to take that crocodile away?
That's a general question, Pumlana. I'm
trying to find out, because there's nothing in summary. He didn't make any presentation.
Yeah, but that means it doesn't arise. It's a general question. Honorable Fultana.
I withdraw.
I just want to thank your table for finally giving me the presentation from Grain South Africa. I did not have it initially. Thank you.
Oh, you're just thinking. All right, okay. Sorry about that. All right, yes?
I'd like clarity as to the difficulties faced by the emerging farmer that you referred to, please.
You'd like what difficulties?
Like clarity as to the difficulties, the challenges that the emerging farmer that was referred to, if he could give us that clarity, the difficulties he's experiencing at the moment. He referred to, the chairperson of Grain referred to that difficulty, and I need clarity. I don't know what, very, 1 minute. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe, one, I have to say that, yes, so in terms of land, yes, as black farmers, we need land. Mm-hmm. But there is one thing, Chair, the challenge that we are facing. You see, we cannot continue, because there are farmers that are having land, the communal land. We are from the villages where there is a lot of land that is not plowed. And you see, we continue saying we must get land. We cannot say we must not get land. But one, you see, you give us land and you render us useless. Because in most cases, most of the farmers, we can take you there where our poor farmers having land and they don't have money. And it seems as if as black farmers we cannot perform. It seems as if as black farmers we are useless. You see, we are saying to government that help us. When we get land, let us have resources. We can go to the bank to loan, but we don't have surety of guarantee. And also, Chair, I just want to make this appeal to government or to parliament. Let's try to help black farmers because we are hungry. We cannot stay long with this hunger. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. Grain SA. Honorable Nkweli.
Thank you very much. No, I just want to check with Grain SA that do you consider a land as a commodity?
All right, reply.
Chair, I'm trying to think what the first thing is. A commodity is something that is defined and it's got a particular value. So I think the short answer is yes. You can quantify it, you can measure it, you can put a value to it because of the potential of it, and it can be used as a tool to finance and to create wealth. So the answer is, I think, yes.
I'm trying to rephrase my question. You are saying, sir, that we need to cross. What I was saying, you think the solution is to give diabetes, but you must get the land fast and give diabetes. The question you didn't explain there. How do we get the land? We don't want to change the constitution. Don't want to, as you said, we don't want to expropriate land and so on. What? How do you get the land? Then you give diabetes. How do you get that?
Yeah, as long as you don't repeat the presentation, because you've already said your solution. All right.
Thank you, Chair. I think let's just the first question that you asked about the bigger farmers. I think our challenge is to put something in front of them and ask them to assist us with this process. Instead of putting a ceiling on the land, I think we debated that a lot of times. It is going to be heavily difficult to administrate that, whether you're a tomato farmer or whether you're a Karoo sheep farmer. Those sort of things are very difficult. But I think in our incentive system, to tell these farmers, listen, if you do this, that, and the other, in assisting us with land reform, there are some incentives in place for you, your land won't be expropriated or something like that. Once we've done something like that, you can even put something like a servitude on the title deed and say, all right, this land is not going to be up for land reform per se, for expropriation. But you're going to have to put some conditions to those farmers, and I think then you will find goodwill to help them. So this is my suggestion on that. There are plenty of farms currently in the market. It has gone terribly bad with us in the last three seasons. We had a drought. There were two seasons of low prices. I think there are plenty of farmers in the market. I think the farmers will assist if we incentivize them properly, and then if we use the current budget not for agri-parks, I think we're going to go a long way, but then you have to sort out the financing.
Thank you very much, and I think that concludes it now with Grain SA. Thank you very much for helping us to understand better. I think Alliance for Rural Development, they're still caught up at the visitor center. Is Prof. Duplis here?
Yes.
And ready?
Yes.
All right, let's take you. Thank you very much for being ready.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honorable members, for having me. My name is Almin Duplis, and I am an academic at the Northwest University. So whenever I'm despondent about life, I go and sit in the Constitutional Court, a place that gives me hope. I have a similar feeling here today, and maybe because the things that both have in common is the Constitution and democracy in action, and both very important reasons why we are here today. And this is, for me, the very basis that this conversation about expropriation without compensation is built on. So I stand here today, where I sit, recognizing and acknowledging the injustices of our past, and I believe that South Africa belongs to all who live in it, united in our diversity. I stand, or I sit in front of this committee, proud to be able to exercise my constitutional right in participating in our constitutional democracy. So let me start. In 2008, I finalized my doctorate in law on compensation for expropriation under the Constitution. My doctorate looked at the tension alluded to before between ownership protected from government interference in Section 25 and the government's power to expropriate property as sanctioned by the same section. And then my focus was on the role that compensation plays in balancing these two, this tension. My doctorate warned that if we are fixed on pre-constitutional notions of expropriation, where the compensation standard is just market value, then we might have trouble reaching the post-apartheid transformation, property law in general, and the way it manifests in compensation for expropriation specifically. My question was, how do we deal with this tension? What do we do? During my study, I found that the constitutional democracy at the time did not have a great impact on compensation for expropriation, since our legal culture is mostly fixed on market value. Since legal culture is sort of an invisible current or undercurrent that shapes our thoughts and beliefs, non-transformation cannot be blamed on the Constitution. It needs critical self-reflection and an acknowledgement of the restraints of the participants in the system. It needs a conscious rethinking and reimagining of how we can reach or we can approach compensation. So since it was an academic study, it provided some theoretical guidelines for transformative interpretation and the implementation of Section 25, and concluded that what we do need is a series of test cases in courts where courts consciously can grapple with the cases in the facts before them, mindful of the new compensation standard of just and equitable and not market value. And my doctorate also warned that in the absence of this grappling with the facts and with principles crystallizing from that, we will be left with a compensation culture fixated on market value and an uncertain future in expropriation law. So, I'm no prophet, but amongst the euphoria that my research is finally relevant and I get my day in Parliament to share it with you, I was grinning the other night when I read that last paragraph again. Apart from the state not really using its expropriation powers to acquire land for land reform, our courts also did not have a proper chance to grapple with a question. And yet, here I sit in front of the Parliamentary Committee to answer one simple question. Should the Constitution be amended in order to establish the future land tenure regime that is needed in this country, yes or no? It is my submission that Section 25 need not be amended to facilitate land reform and that it is not necessary to make the changes to the Constitution to achieve just and equitable redistribution of land. I support the findings suggested by the high-level panel report that need not be repeated here, but I urge Parliament to take it serious and to implement the suggestions there. We need not change the Constitution because the Constitution demands an interpretive framework in which the property clause promotes values in an open and democratic society. A balancing of the protectionist section in 25.1-3 and the transformative sections in the rest of the section 25. And this balance essentially seeks to avoid a zero-sum game and is a creative tension that should be balanced and reconciled as far as possible. Of course, this might mean that in some instances the creative tension will balance on zero rand, but it will avoid a situation where zero rand compensation is paid in all circumstances. Context matters. But expropriation is only one tool that the state can use to acquire property and not an end in itself. And this for me is very important. Expropriation is not an end in itself. And this makes the yes or no question a very limiting question. The discussions on this should also include a discussion on who should benefit from redistribution. How must this be done in a constitutional democracy? These are pertinent questions in deciding whether an amendment to Section 25 will really be a panacea to solve the problems of land reform in the past 24 years. We need to ask what will happen to the urban land question and how will we deal with tenure upgrades in both the urban and rural areas. In our written submission, which is a more thorough one than the one you have here today, we discuss a land administration system that can oversee all aspects of land administration, a system that considers a diversity of rights that can be elevated to a form of ownership or strong rights. These rights, like the so-called invisible customary law rights, are already recognized in our constitution and should be reflected in the land administration system. And these workable solutions are not dependent on either a yes or a no answer to the question on whether the constitution should be amended or not. It is dependent on people pulling up their sleeves and doing the work. Another aspect that is touched on in our submission is the expropriation bill. So I am aware that the bill was withdrawn last week in order not to create a parallel process with this committee, which I think was a wise move. Most of what wants to be done or clarified can be done in this legislation. Should Parliament want to specify instances in which land can be expropriated with no compensation, or should they want to place conditions on such expropriation, this can be done in terms of legislation. A constitution is not couched in detailed language because it's a document that's supposed to last and because it should be flexible to allow for the changing socio-economic circumstances in the country. It is our framework in which things must be done, but it is not the document that does the things. How things should be done is set out in legislation. Once the constitution is amended to specify issues such as when property can be expropriated with compensation, this is then fixed and inflexible. So this is our strongest submissions as a bunch of lawyers. I speak on behalf of some of my colleagues as well. Leave the constitution as it is and use legislation to deal with the technicalities. There are no perfect solutions for this land question in South Africa. There are only better solutions. And we as a country must first figure out what the best option forward is. For me, this motion, the hearings, and these presentations presented us with an ideal opportunity to place the land question in the public discourse so that we, the people of South Africa, can reimagine the future of this country. It resurrected an issue and it presented us with an opportunity of self-reflection to ask what our role can be in solving the land question. We see ordinary citizens rise to the conversation and we see organized agriculture extending a hand. People line up in the Tumamina line. In a world where we are so concerned with outcomes, must the constitution be amended, yes or no? Maybe we can today, for a while, ponder on the process. The process in itself had value already. It gave people a voice. It showed our fault lines. It highlighted where we have hard work to do as a nation. It put the issue of land in the public. It shows that we, the people of South Africa, want land reform to work. As I ponder on this process, it reminds me of this very striking quote that I heard last week at the Restitution Conference, a quote by John Scar, where he said, "The future is not some place we are going, but one we are creating. The paths are not to be found, but to be made. And the activity of making them changes both the maker and the destination." Thank you very much.
Thank you, Prof. and your team. Honorable Ngwebe.
Thank you. Thanks for the presentation, Prof. But just as a clarity-seeking question, you from the Alliance for Rural Development.
No. It's a Northwest University. We've swapped.
Oh, okay. That's fine. It's okay.
Honorable Kurendov.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much for this very good legal argument. Can I ask you, the problem we've had is that it was never tested in the Constitutional Court, and that is the sad part of this whole debate now. But if you look at Section 25(3), and if I can read, where it says quite clearly that The amount of compensation at the time and manner of payment must be just and equitable. If you add something after that to say it might be nil, as you know, I'm not using the correct legal term now.
Yes.
What is your views on that? That slight change.
I'm going to step back a little bit. I read on the weekend that there's also a suggestion that in Section 25H you can add nothing in this provision may impede, and people say that maybe we can put in there nothing in this provision plus compensation. My legal technical view on that is you would say the circle is round. So, you know, there's already saying there's a circle, and then you just say it's round. So you're already saying something that's in the section. If it's needed for clarity, if I read the mood right, we are moving to a space where people want to make a constitutional amendment. If it's only a cosmetic change, that's what it's going to be. So it's not going to be a substantive change. So my view is, you know, from where I sit, it's not been challenged. It is possible in terms of the Constitution. I don't know why you would want to put in something like that if it's a mere cosmetic change. And yeah, I don't know if that answers your question. Sorry.
Thank you very much, Prof. Honourable Swartz.
Parliament has also got the power to refer matters to the Constitutional Court. Would that not be a way to go as well, to refer the present wording of Section 25 so that the Constitutional Court can give parameters as to when there's a possibility of expropriation of without compensation?
I think it's very difficult for the court to do that if there are not specific facts in front of them, because the question of when something is just and equitable will be a contextual question. So you will have to look at the facts before you, and I think it will be, and that's also why it's very difficult to just say what just and equitable compensation is in terms of legislation, because you cannot just abstract things that can be applicable to all circumstances, because the question about what is just and equitable is circumstantial. Why I think it's good to have civil test cases before the court is because, say for instance, we are dealing with an unproductive farm, and that issue goes to court. Should the state pay compensation there? On those certain facts, the court will be able to grapple with what will be just and equitable in those circumstances, as opposed to the circumstances where there's maybe a very productive farm and the court then needs to look at what is just and equitable in those circumstances. And the principles that come from that will differ. So that's why I think it's better if the court is confronted with specific set of facts in front of them in order to then determine that in those type of circumstances what just and equitable will be.
Short follow-up, if possible.
All right.
But a constitutional amendment will in any case have to go to the Constitutional Court for certification. Would you agree with that or not?
If there's concerns about it, yes.
Is it not a general acceptable that all constitutional clause, all constitutional amendments...
You've got an answer. Honourable Mbumlwana, followed by Mukwili and Maile.
Excuse me, lady. I assume this is your daughter.
No.
The one that has...
No, that's Grain SA.
Which one, this? Can you pass on, because I looked at the wrong document. Can you, others, people? Or you go like that?
Honourable Mukwili. Followed by Honourable Maile.
Thank you very much, Chair. I heard you mentioning the balances of the dispossessed and the dispossessor. Now, my question will be, how do you view the interest of the dispossessed vis-a-vis the dispossessor?
I'm not sure what it is exactly that you are... Sorry, what?
I want to check with you. You, in your presentation, before. You gave us a preamble of the disbalance, the disbalancing of the poor and the rich, and the manner in which the land was dispossessed, the historic background thereof. Now, I'm asking you whether when you do the balancing of the access to land, do you view the interest of those that were dispossessed of the land and the interest of those that I want to speak it in my language so that I can get it. Maybe you will hear. You explained the balances, né, between the dispossessed and the dispossessor. Now, my question is, how do you view the interest of those that dispossessed land from the dispossessors? Thank you.
Okay, so section 25.3 refers to the interest of the holder of the rights, which is normally the landowner, and then the interest of the public in effecting land reform. So it doesn't refer to specific individuals. It says if we do want, and I think that links on to the question that was asked earlier for agribusiness, you know, do we have the budget for this? And that will come in that kind of question. You look at what are the interests of the owner, and you look at the interest of our country in effecting land reform. And in certain circumstances, if that balance is very skewed, and I think we should also take knowledge of the fact that the more unequal our society is, the more difficult it is going to be to effect that balance, and the more will be expected from landowners, right? So we need to balance these two interests in order to move forward.
How are you going to balance them if the majority don't have the means of production?
So that was a follow-up on Romukwil, and it vias here at the, from the chair.
Can I answer?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. See, I think what people, and this is what I hear from the conversations, people think that the expropriation is the end in itself. So when you come to a situation where you are the owner of a piece of land and there's a beneficiary that needs access to the land and the state needs to acquire that land through expropriation, you need to look at what would be the just and equitable compensation amount to be paid for that farmer. We don't look at market value anymore, although in some instances that balancing can fall on market value. But if it will be impossible to do land reform because the market value will hold us back, it will require us to adjust the compensation amount in order to affect land reform.
The last one, Honourable Mkwili, otherwise it becomes...
How do you justify the just market value?
No, it's not market value, it's just and equitable. So
how do you justify that?
Well, that is very difficult, and this is also the reason why I think our courts or in our minds we have been stuck on market value, and the courts, in the instances where Section 25.3 was tested in the court, it was not land reform cases, the courts find it very difficult to quantify the amount to pay to the owner because it is difficult to quantify all the other elements and things like justice and equity. And that is why it's very important to make these cases go to court so that the courts can tell us this is how we extrapolate certain principles in order to determine what is just and equitable compensation.
Thank you. Honourable Mwaile, followed by Honourable Mlautsi.
No, thanks very much, Chair. Chair, my take is that the university is comprised of a variety of stakeholders. And I would like to know exactly who does the prof represent.
Prof?
So as I said in our written submission as well, I am not presenting a university view on this. Me as an academic with particular knowledge on the subject, I am presenting my view as an academic to this committee. So I'm not presenting...
You said, Prof, you are with other lawyers.
So. Well, my colleagues at my faculty. So we have submitted this document together.
Yeah. Yes. Honorable Lousy?
Thanks. Thanks, Chairperson. Yeah, my first question is a little bit cleared about the when she said us, then we in the presentation we can't see any organized structure. So okay. Maybe if they have structure, we appreciate to know who are they. Secondly, I want to know about when you said when you finalized your doctrine in 2008. I want to know in your research, did you ever try to research in the rural area the need of land by African blacks in particular in your research when you are completing your doctrine? Did you ever spread your research to the black areas or African areas or rural areas? Again, in 2008, did you visited the land ownership audit by that time? And now when you prepared this letter with your colleagues, did you also check the land ownership audit? What is your response on that?
Yes, Prof.
Of course, I take into account the bigger picture in South Africa, but when you do academic research like that, you focus on a specific research question. And my research question was, how do we need to interpret Section 25(3) of the Constitution in order to make land reform work and in order to have a transformed society? So my research focus was specifically on that, and being a legal question as well, and maybe that's the limitation of our lawyers, you look at the legal implications of things, but you do it within the bigger context, of course, of society. The issue, and I want to come back to what I said before, expropriation is not an end in itself. It's only a means for the state to acquire property. Land reform needs to happen. Our ownership patterns need to change. I think most of us in this room agree on that, but our question is, how must that happen? How do you use the tool of expropriation with or without compensation in order to get the outcomes that you want in the land reform process? And that is also why the question for me to ask whether Section 25 must be amended is a very limiting question, because we don't ask questions that now that the state expropriated the property, what then? And I'm afraid that we're not having those conversations, and if we are not going to have those conversations, we are not going to move forward. We're going to be stuck on where we are at the moment.
Well, Fultana, followed by Qatar.
Thank you very much. I'm glad that the professor has finally clarified to the House that these are her personal views, not representatives of any institution at all. Just a loose arrangement of people in her faculty. This explains now why there is a statement in 5.3 to say that what needs to be said from the onset is that a narrow rights-based approach to land reform is problematic. Prof, bottom line is that why this whole debate came about is because it has become clear that a large majority of South African citizens have got no right of ownership to land. That's why we are in this debate. And with your approach, you are dismissing that. You are flatly denying people the opportunity to have legislation which clearly states how they can easily have access to land. That's my point. Now, clarify us why you're coming up with that kind of approach. We're solving a social problem, yes, government.
Honorable Fultan, that question then is beyond it's beyond what she said. What she said is captured in 5.3, right? As you pointed it. So I think that you just went beyond the scope. All right, let's have Honorable Qatar.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just want to follow up specifically on the question Honourable Maluzi asked you. When doing your doctorate and with the research, did you do any international research, and what were your findings with specifically, you know, on expropriation without compensation? Thank you.
Yes, I did do a comparison study to the German Constitution, because our Section 25 is mimicked on the German Constitution, of course, being mindful that the contexts differ, right? So the German context differs from the South African context. But what I like about the German approach to this question is they say if you are an owner, you have an obligation, and that's actually written in the German Constitution, that owners, with ownership comes an obligation, and that's a social obligation. So you cannot just be an owner not mindful of the social context. And in terms of that kind of interpretation, the courts have found, in the Constitutional Court in Germany, found that if, especially if you do reform-related redress, that the compensation can be less than market value compensation. But again, then the court set out exactly how you approach that, which gives clarity, which is what we need in this situation.
Honourable Mbabama.
No, Chair, mine is a very simple one. We were given this documentation before we came here, and the professor has actually stated up front that this is a view of her academic colleagues as well as herself, and she's actually listed it at the back. So I would really urge my colleagues to read.
No, Honorable Obama, that's my work. Eh? Don't do it for me.
Okay.
Honorable Tillis.
No, Chairperson, I think I am covered by your comments before the previous speaker to the question of asking, because even if the member...
Can you come closer to the mic?
Was he on her own?
Order, members. Order.
Chair, I believe everybody who is here was invited, so it's not for us to ask this kind of question that we're asking. And I'm surprised that members who were opposed to these deliberations are the ones that are benefiting most now.
Chair, we are benefiting because it has been ruled
on,
by
Honourable Mulaudzi.
Thank you, Chair. Although I was not answered in terms of the land ownership audit when I was asking the professor, and I want to put it to you, Professor, that you are hiding the group you are, and I'm putting to you that you are Afro Forum in disguise.
Can you talk hard?
Can I answer that, please?
Honorable Mkwili.
No, Chair, thank you very much. We are asking these questions because some of us, I don't know, it is deliberate that we are not being given the prepared files. And my sister must not talk as if we are useless. For the reason for Parliament to be where it is now is because of us. So don't think that we don't do research and we don't read these things. We are not being privy to have this information.
Yeah.
I want the House to know that. My question to the lady.
Am
I protected?
Clarity question, yes, please.
Yeah, that's where I'm going. No, I'm saying those nonsenses because you have been commenting about those nonsenses. I must make it on record. It must be, it's not a problem. It's not for you to tell me who am I. I'm who am I. Thank you. That's who I am. Chair, in your presentation, ma'am, you did mention that courts can I be protected, Chair? It's not like I'm scared of anyone.
Please, let's not flout the process.
I'm not scared
of you,
talk, brother.
And we'll rule
I'm
out
not.
If she's out.
Don't even intimidate me. Never.
Yeah.
You must not talk Honourable, when I'm still talking.
Honourable.
Please, don't do that. Don't do that. I'm not going to be scared by you or threatened by you.
No.
Please.
Honourable McQueen.
I am who I am.
Yes. No. Please stop the interjections to the member that was on.
You must also tell him.
Honourable McQueen.
He must not insult me the way he's doing.
Just proceed with your way.
Thank you. Ma'am, you did mention in your presentation there that the court must decide on expropriation, if I heard you correctly. I don't have your presentation. I'm not privy to this file. So you must pardon me. Now, I want to check with you that, are you telling us that whatever that needs to happen in terms of expropriation of land, with or without compensation, or land reform programs, must we then, as a country, refer all those matters to courts to decide for us on how to handle them?
Yeah, thank you. It took a long time for such a nice question.
That is a very
all right, Honourable Mpumlwana, followed by Dr. Mulan, we're closing it there.
Must I answer that? So I think that's a very valid question, because a court process is long and retracted, and there can also be criticisms against court judgments, right? Because it's not necessarily a deliberative process. My argument back in 20 was that courts are best dealt or best situated to deal with the question of what is just and equitable, because they have concrete cases in front of them. Justice and equity cannot be abstracted to certain principles that can be applicable in every situation, because the question of justice and equity is a contextual question. What is just and equitable in one situation is not necessarily just and equitable in another situation. And then maybe through time, if the courts have deliberated on facts in front of them, there can be certain principles that crystallize. And I'm totally willing to say, even in regulations, or as we have, what do you call these practice notes sometimes, that industry can come up and say, the banks can come up, and AgriBiz, Grain SA can say, well, in certain circumstances, these are factors that you can take into account when you determine what is just and equitable. Because the courts really struggle for the very reason that some of those principles cannot be quantified. So they struggle to find, and as lawyers, we like the certainty, we like the quantity, but I think now that we are all having this conversation, it's perhaps a good starting point for industry or for people who might be affected that can come up with creative ideas of helping the courts determine what might be in their specific circumstances be just and equitable.
Mulwana?
Yes, Professor. I thought you would come up with a conclusion that says this is the way forward. You, with your conclusion, it seems that you're just saying, let us, if we are just beginning to do what? How do we go forward? You say that Section 25 expropriation or should not be divorced from holistic approach. I mean, you come with very good English words, but you don't come concretely and say, this is the way forward. Are you saying that we're just beginning to talk, we must sit down and talk? What are you exactly saying?
So
what must we do?
I think I said in the beginning of my presentation that we have the high-level panel report that pinpoints exactly where our problems lie, and it comes up with concrete. I think you've got the wrong document there, maybe.
This is also a wrong document.
Yeah.
Amen. I never get your correct document.
Honorable
Mulda?
This is a wrong document.
What's going on?
No, but before, you have not been asked.
Can you repeat yourself closer to the mic?
No, I don't understand. Because each time I try to talk, I'm told it's the wrong document. Now, is this a wrong document?
Honorable Mulan, we'll sort that one out. Let's get Honorable Mulder. Yeah, I'm saying, you are talking to the wrong, so you don't have a question.
That is a submission, yes. That was the written submission, yes, sorry.
Okay.
My apologies.
So you have an answer, Prof?
Yes, no, I don't have. I beg your pardon.
No. You've already put your question.
Chairperson, I was putting a question.
All right.
Now, you are saying that I wanted to say, she said she's the wrong document. Now she says it's a correct document.
Yeah, yeah, but you already put the question, right? Yes. The wrong document, but the question, the whole thing is answered. You said you wanted to hear the conclusion in terms of what then is captured in their conclusions in relation to the question before us.
Correct.
Yes.
So
that's done.
That's not been answered. That's what I'm saying. That one has not been answered.
Fine. Prof,
As I was saying before, I said in the beginning that we agree with the high-level panel report from this parliament, and we think that parliament should take the recommendations and the conclusions in that document seriously and implement the changes that they suggest there. My biggest problem is we have not had an expropriation for land reform before in this country, so I don't know why we say that that is the issue that stands between successful land reform.
Honourable Mulder.
Yes, Chairperson, I just want to assist the process. We are at the beginning of 4 days of listening to submissions. All three of the submissions we heard this morning were accompanied by written documentation. But it's quite clear that some of the colleagues don't have that documentation. So all I'm asking is that before we listen to somebody, could you please just make sure from the table that everybody's got the documents in front of them, it will assist the process.
All right. Thank you. We'll do that. Members, I think I'm suggesting that we take the break now for as scheduled in the program and return. We'll be back. We'll resume at 5 to 12.
Documents, right? But the file, did you open the